This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. If there's one thing that everyone listening right now has probably used today, it's the Massachusetts transportation system, be it a bus, a train, or driving over the bridge. It's nearly impossible to get through a day without using something that my guest is in charge of. Here with me in Studio 3 is Richard Davey, Secretary and CEO of Mass Department of Transportation. Secretary Davey, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We're opening up the lines. If you have questions or comments, you can join us at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970.
No one ever has any questions for me. Yeah, are you kidding me?
I can tell you right now, we've already gotten questions from our Facebook page. And people can also tweet us at Boss Pub Radio if you want, or continue to write us at our Facebook page. So, Richard Davey, you got a lot going on.
I do.
And I mean, you're in charge of it all. Let's talk about, something uplifting.
Sure.
First of all, the online ticket sales, the mobile ticket application that now folks can in a great way, buy their tickets on their phones. Talk about that.
No, we are very excited about this. You know, our commuter rail customers in particular have been waiting for a long time for something other than the ticket that is punched with an old hole puncher, technology from the 1850s, I think. And so as of today, any commuter rail customer in the Commonwealth can now purchase their commuter rail ticket on a smartphone. There's an application we've developed. We are the first commuter rail in the United States to push this out. We adopted it from Europe. You know, folks are always telling us, look to Europe for innovation. Well, we did. And we've had tremendous sales already. We've already had 26,000 people download the application. To give you a sense, we only have about 80,000 commuter rail customers a day in and out of the city. So we think this is a huge improvement for our customers and for the conductors, too, who can be more focused on announcements and opening doors and helping customers as opposed to those transactions on board. So we're very, very excited.
Other than obviously an organizational improvement and an efficiency for a lot of consumers, does it save money? Does it help in that way in any way?
It certainly does. I mean, had we looked at, for example, rolling out the Charlie card machines, as folks know, all of our commuter rail stations are gate-free, so it's, you know, a pay on board, if you will, or a proof of payment on board. It would have cost us tens of millions of dollars to put those Charlie machines out, get Charlie cards. It would have been certainly costly to continue to maintain because most of our stations are outdoors. So, you know, classically, I think government, particularly when it comes to technology, spends tens of millions of dollars on something that is almost immediately obsolete. We know that our customers are gravitating to cell phones as being their wallet. I mean, literally, Kelly, one day you're probably not going to carry a wallet. Your credit cards and your debit cards, everything, maybe your driver's license in the future will all be on your cell phone. So, rather than leading from behind, we really wanted to lead by leading in this regard. And so we're excited. We think there's a lot of applications in the future, too, for our bus and subway system.
So that's got to be a boon for those commuter rail customers, some of whom were a little bit unhappy when budget concerns caused some service cutbacks and really some elimination of routes. It's been a little while now since that's been implemented. How's that going?
Well, you know, certainly for customers, we did eliminate some service on the weekends in particular, Needham Branch. We cut some service, the Old Colony and Greenbush. We didn't have a lot of ridership on the weekends in those places, but at the same time, for those customers who relied upon it, it has been difficult. The fare increase, we increased fares, as you know, on July 1st. Ridership is up, however, so for many of our customers, they seem to be able to absorb it, although for customers who are disabled. You know, the ride took an enormous fare increase as well, and that's something that we're continuing to watch, we're concerned about. But, you know, the cost of providing the service, the debt service, which is, you know, really one of the biggest drivers of cost at the MBTA, continues to put pressure on us to find ways to increase revenues and to reduce our costs.
Our number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. I am here with Secretary and CEO of Mass Department of Transportation, Richard Davey. He oversees not only the commuter rail system, but the highway system, but the MBTA, the trains, everything. It's all his in his wheelhouse, so give him a call if you have a specific question. I do have Facebook questions, and I'm going to get to those in just a minute after a little bit more conversation with Secretary Davey. So because of the highway system is also underneath your purview.
Indeed.
Let's talk about the scandal at the highway system there with Sheila Burgess and the Mass Highway Safety Commissioner, who just was forced to resign because of her history.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, the state highway bureau does not report to me. Does not report to the DOT. But we did work with her and her team to make sure grants were given out for highway safety improvements. I mean, the good news is, putting aside some of the controversy around the hiring, is that highway safety has improved in the Commonwealth. We have seen a reduction in fatalities and accidents on our highways. Although I have to say, you know, one thing we're watching closely, though, is with hands-free devices and whatnot, people are distracted. So it's not just drunk driving, the classic issues in the past, but I can't tell you how many people I see, you know, fumbling with their cell phone or their iPhone, maybe making a call, more likely checking a text message. You know, for everyone listening, please do not do that. Distracted driving is something we're concerned about. I can't speak to the hiring and all those issues in 2007, but what I can tell you is that, you know, we're focused with our partners in the Executive Office of Public Safety to continue to make sure that our roads are as safe as possible, and we are making strides in that regard.
Is there any evidence that some of the rules against the distracted driving that you're talking about are working? Because, as you say, you see more and more people doing it, and folks know it's not allowed, but yet...
Yeah, and I think so. You're certainly, particularly working with our partners in state police, you know, we've targeted some roads where we've had concerns. Route 24, for example, earlier this year, we had a couple of very unfortunate accidents which resulted in fatalities. Some of those are still under investigation. So what we did was work with state police to get extra patrols out this summer. You know, lots of arrests for drunk driving, stolen cars, some other issues, and then thousands of tickets for people who were, either disobeying the speed limit and or using mobile devices when they shouldn't have, and then when pulled over, not wearing seatbelts. I mean, in this day and age, it still confounds me that people aren't wearing seatbelts for sure. So, you know, we're all human. Laws are there to prevent some of this activity and poor decision-making, but at the same time, it's going to happen. So we've just got to continue to push a message, particularly to our young drivers, and then enforce with our partners in state police when we have to.
One other question about the highway safety issues, and that is, it always comes up every now and then about raising the speed limit. You just referenced that. Is that going to be on the table at any point?
No, I don't think so. I mean, most of the speed limits around the state are 55. You know, the turnpike in some areas are 65. I think there are studies that show that, in fact, when you reduce the speed limits, you increase safety. When you reduce speed limits, you actually improve, gas mileage, for example. So I don't see that coming anytime soon. I think what we're looking for is improvements like we did open a fourth lane recently on 128. I think we're looking at ways to improve the Mass Turnpike and how we toll. You know, we've got a new device out there now where folks, if you don't have a transponder, you can actually go buy a preloaded one, a $20 preloaded one for $20 to go through our cashless lanes, if you will. And I think we want to push that in the future. Those are the kinds of things we're thinking about. But, you know, we don't have room in this state to build more superhighways. We can make improvements, I think, to our current system, but there's not a whole lot we can do in terms of growth for that. So that's why I think we've got to be more efficient in how we provide our services and encourage more people to take transit, frankly.
I want to get to some of the funding issues around the highway repair. But before that, I just want to highlight a couple of questions from my Facebook folks. Diane asked about the holiday traffic congestion. She says, do you think it is acceptable for travelers to sit in hours of traffic on the westbound turnpike every single holiday? If you have not provided enough road space or a technology that allows smooth flow of exit, then you should simply open the tolls and let travelers through.
Diane, I can tell you unequivocally that toll collection is not the reason for traffic. It is volume. We watch that very carefully to see if toll collection is a major reason for congestion. And I can tell you, both the highway administrator and I watched that Columbus Day and Thanksgiving. It's just, the fact is, it's not. It's just we have so many cars traveling at those, times of the holidays. Columbus Day weekend in particular, the weather was good. A lot of leaf peepers were headed out west, if you will. It's the first weekend for college students, typically, that they can get back home or to visit friends, if you will, after the academic season starts. So that typically has been our busiest day of the travel year, as opposed to folks thinking Thanksgiving. In fact, it's the Friday before Columbus Day. So we watch it closely. A lot of the Friday afternoons, too, in the summer are also congested. So one thing we've been doing on I-93, we have these new real-time traffic boards, so you actually know what's ahead of you. Those will be rolled out on the Massachusetts Turnpike by Memorial Day this coming year to give our customers more information. My goal is to put WBZ traffic out of business, by the way. Can I say that on this air?
I can say it. It's public media.
That's right. Yeah. So, but in seriousness, giving our customers more information about traffic. It's not fair, but at the same time, we try as best to prepare. But I can tell you, if it is tolls, we would waive them, but it's really not. It's just volume, folks all going at the same time to the same place. So.
All right. We're speaking with Secretary of Transportation Richard Davey, talking all things transportation, A to T. And online is Steve, who is on the turnpike, making use of our highway system. You're on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
Thanks a lot. It's an observation about the mobile app for the commuter rail purchases, which I think is absolutely a brilliant idea.
It's a British idea, by the way, Steve. You sound British, yeah. and it's true. Yeah. We stole it from the British Rail Company, so thank you.
Thank you. So one observation, I downloaded the app and a couple of other passengers, and I take the Rockport to North Station. I have T-Mobile, and I don't really get good phone coverage till Salem, and another person has AT&T. They get it like in Montserrat. Mm-hmm. So it's really inconvenient to use and also to purchase, and also for the conductors, because they come around and we ask them if you could wait to Salem. So it's inconvenient for them to keep tabs of who they need to go back and check on. Is there any thought to working with the carrier companies to get some more signal?
It's a great question. The answer is we will talk to them. We have heard that, and Kelly said you're driving the Pike now. I have heard that. There's this particular spot in Westboro, by the way, for all customers listening, and it happens to me too. I'm on the phone and it dies. We've been working with a couple of the providers to get that. We're also looking too at improving our Wi-Fi on board. I know when we initially rolled it out a couple years ago, it was very good, but now it's oversubscribed. It's slow as heck. So we're going to be looking at rolling out better, improved Wi-Fi, more bandwidth on our trains as well, which should also help. But with that said, we will work with some of these providers to make sure that they're providing enough service on the Rockport line and Montserrat, as you said. We will talk to them. Thank you for that tip.
Thanks very much, Steve.
Thank you. Bye.
We're speaking with Secretary of Transportation Richard Davey. Our number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970 if you have a question for the Secretary. Kate from Lexington, go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
Hello. I actually have a couple of questions, but my first one was why every single lane on the Mass Turnpike does not have an Easy Pass reader.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've heard that one before. Another is, why isn't there a more systematic alternate merge whenever you come to a traffic or construction site? It should be understood that the two lanes that are merging, every other car alternates. It really speeds up the process of any kind of slowdown. And sometimes you go through a slowdown, it could take, you know, many, many minutes, and you get there and there's nothing other than a little construction site, and it's just a slow merge. If they had a zipper symbol that would show that every other car had to merge at a lane drop, that kind of thing.
Well, I love the zipper. No, I do. That's a great idea. And you're right. Sometimes I think in Massachusetts, we could be a little more kind to our fellow drivers. I'll say that. It's a good point. I'll bring that back to my team because we do have a lot of construction going on. On the question of tolling, let me just say this. I mean, we've been studying this very closely. We've been studying it very closely in that I think there's a better way to do business. We're looking at what Virginia's doing, what New Hampshire has done. So more to come there because we are very cognizant that there's got to be a better way to reduce congestion. The earlier question, there are times certainly when how we toll causes congestion. There's no doubt about that. You've got my commitment, Kate, that in the next couple of months, you'll probably be hearing from more from us about how to significantly improve what we have today.
Is there a reason why there's not a reader at every single lane? I mean, it can't cost that much.
Well, it's not cost. It's more of a safety question. So, in other words, if you've got folks who are speeding through and others who may be actually needing to stop and take a toll, for example, I think Pennsylvania has this, and they've had some issues with having all lanes, to your point, that have both. I think what we've done it is in the wider lanes to the right, if you will, as opposed to the more skinny lanes. That's the reason why we have speed limits in those lanes. It's really not, it has nothing to do with the readers. It's just we don't want people driving at, you know, 35, 45, 50 miles an hour through this more narrow area. But that's the real reason. It's a safety question.
Can I just make a point, though,
please?
That there's often a risk of an accident as people are trying to figure out which lane they can go in.
Sure.
Massachusetts. If you go to New Jersey or even not going up to New Hampshire and to Maine, I believe every single lane has a transponder reader. And in New Jersey, they also have more cameras, so you can actually monitor traffic on the highways from a smartphone or a computer, which you were talking about smartphones before.
Sure.
It seems like there's an awful a lot more that could be done.
No.
One more question, though.
I do agree with that. Let me just quickly on cameras. Obviously, we don't want you checking your smartphone when you're driving, but your point before you leave and the real-time information, and we're leading the country in that regard, so the traffic signs we have on 93 now literally are taking the Bluetooth signals in everybody's cell phone that's driving from point A to point B and calculating how long it has taken to go from point A to point B. So cameras as well, we've deployed them on Route 6, and we had them out on 90 for this past Thanksgiving. But I do agree with you. We can do more, and we are.
One other question is there a way, like a suggestion line or a suggestion website where people could write in if they know a local problem like bad signage or a dangerous intersection so that they can report something to the state?
Yeah, the answer is yes. We have on our website both email, a telephone number that you could call. We just recently updated our phone tree system, so you should be able to get a live person to be able to report those kinds of things. And you can also, I think there's a general mailbox for me, secretary of, well, you know what, let me try to think now, what is that general mailbox? But you could definitely go to our website and there's information points where you can definitely send that to us, and we're happy to take care of it.
Kate, thanks very much for the call, and we'll look up the secretary's email address and give it out a little bit later as soon as we get it. Just a follow-up on the toll question from a Facebook questioner who wants to know, why do MassPike users have to pay for I-93?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I suppose there's cross-fertilization everywhere, right? So, you know, I don't own a car, for example, but there's no doubt that some of my taxes pay for our highway system, the T, vice versa, transit. So there's sort of cross-fertilization everywhere. There was a decision made in the past that the Turnpike Authority would the old Turnpike Authority now, would assume construction and then the debt service and the big dig. So, yes, definitely tolls were being paid for that. It's been significantly restricted now such that it's the Metropolitan Highway System where tolls for the tunnels and the Tobin Bridge now, you know, sort of pay for a small subset of the Turnpike and the inner core of Massachusetts. But we do hear that frequently, a toll equity question, why aren't we tolling elsewhere? The short answer is because we need federal permission to do it, and the federal government until recently hasn't been really willing to give states the ability to toll other facilities. So that's one piece. And then at the same time, though, I think you know many folks agree that the Mass Turnpike is one of our best-kept roads because we are dedicating a lot of dollars into the pavement and to the maintenance and the upkeep of the road. So we're dedicating many of those dollars to pay off debt and at the same time keep upkeep on the road.
Well, that's a good segue to how much money you need to make these repairs and the deficit that the highway system has right now. It's big.
It's enormous. And, you know, Governor Patrick, Lieutenant Governor Murray have really asked us at the DOT to do two things. One is continue to reform, to reduce our costs, to do projects more quickly, to have more customer amenities that don't cost very much. And we've been very much focused on that and reducing our cost model. But at the same time, it is clear to us that reform alone is not enough to do what we need to do. What we're hearing from our customers, we're doing a statewide conversation right now. We'll be actually in Boston. We were in Medford last night, in Boston tomorrow night, listening to folks about what they want to see. But the state of affairs isn't good. You know, the MBTA has a significant budget deficit. The T is required to balance its budget every year, which is why last year we were out cutting service, raising fares. We might have to do that again this year if we don't solve it. The highway department, however, has been able to, I don't want to say hide, but certainly be more clever in how it finances things. So the folks mowing the lawn along the Mass Pike or picking up snow, we're paying for them off the state credit card. And we've been doing that since the mid-1990s. It is not a sustainable long-term financing model. And so, you know, I think for the first time in a long time, we're being honest with folks to say, hey, you know what? This is not the right thing to do. Our kids shouldn't be paying for maintenance that we do today. Not the big capital stuff, but just the, you know, cleaning out culverts and cutting down trees. That's not the way to go. It's an enormous problem. T's operating deficit next year, somewhere between $100 and $135 million. The highway department has been dumping all of these operating employees on the credit card to the tune of about $250 million a year. And then our regional transit authorities and some of the smaller cities in the state have needs too. You know, it's not a good state of affairs. I mean, I think ultimately, I know the governor, lieutenant governor think transportation is actually about jobs and economic development. It's not about Cali liking planes or Rich Davey liking buses, but this is enabling the economic vibrancy of this commonwealth. And if we're not investing in our infrastructure, then we're going to see a slow degradation of quality of life. We're going to see businesses not wanting to grow here and potentially move out of the state. So that's what government we're really talking about is needing to invest so it can create jobs, economic development, a better quality of life for the citizens of the Commonwealth.
And when you talk about that $250 million with regard to highways, when the question comes up about tolls,
sure.
I mean, and people do say often, look, it seems like I've been paying for this highway for 30 years, 40 years.
Well,
you know, what's the end game here? But yet there are all these repairs that need to be made.
Well, the answer is, it's a great question. So the Western Turnpike, basically everything from 128 West, that debt will be paid off in fiscal 17. We will have no more debt on that highway. And frankly, these tolls are scheduled to come down. The challenge there, however, to your point, is that but we still have to maintain it. We still have to pave it every few years. We still have to clean it. So I think as part of our conversation, we need to be thinking about how we're paying for highway maintenance. But certainly the turnpike, the Western Turnpike, as we call it, will be paid off in 4 years.
Oh, well, better.
So we'll own it, but that's then we own it, and then we have to invest in it still.
Yes, you do. Let's move over to the MBTA, which is a big money suck. And I mean, it is.
Wait a minute.
It is. And we talk, I mean, it's very, I think a lot of people believe it to be essential to a large city functioning and also to the reputation of a large city and drawing people here. I mean, I think there's little disagreement about that, though I would have to say that since you're relying on the goodwill of lawmakers, there are many who think it's a city thing and has nothing to do with the rest of the state. So make the case for why this is important for all of us.
Sure. Well, a couple comments on that. I mean, for whether we want to admit it or not, I mean, Boston is the economic and political capital of the state. So as Boston goes, so does the rest of the state. So if we're not investing in the city, with that said, this administration, Governor, Lieutenant Governor, have been clear about investing across the state, not just typically has been in transportation in Boston. And so, but the MBTA, we move 1.3 million people a day. So to the question earlier about traffic, I can assure you that if we're not investing in the MBTA, you're going to see a lot more traffic on our roads coming into Boston than you do today. So that's certainly one piece. Kendall Square, we wouldn't be seeing the growth in Kendall Square, in my opinion, in Cambridge, had it not been for the Red Line. The largest development going on the East Coast is at Assembly Square in Somerville. And the reason why is because the state made an investment and we're building an Orange Line station there today. They would not have moved along had it been for that that state investment. So those are vignettes for these are the kinds of investments that we've made in the past and we need to continue to make for jobs and economic development. Transportation is huge in that regard. If businesses can't move their customers, their employees, their patients on transportation, and in particular in Boston, the MBTA, we are all in deep trouble. I'm the guy who has shut down the T twice in the last year now because of storms. And I can tell you that I have received a lot of criticism, particularly from some in the hospital community about shutting the T down. And what I say to folks is, look, there may come a time when a general manager has to shut it down, not because there's a storm, but because we don't have the financial wherewithal to to move people anymore. So we have to be thinking today about making those investments. We have worked hard at reducing the costs. We've gone from two operators in the Orange Line to one, two operators in the Red Line to one. The employees are paying more in health care. No more 23 and out. You could retire at the MBTA with 23 years service, regardless of age, by the way. That's gone. So we're trying to realign all these golden plated benefits, golden parachutes, if you will, to what people, what taxpayers expect in the private sector today. With that said, Cal, I mentioned earlier, we spend more on paying off our credit card at the T than in payroll. So if I fired everybody at the MBTA, $400 million in payroll, we would still be paying $425 million to pay off the credit card. The challenge with transportation is this. We are still paying for things all across the state that we built 10, 15, and 20 years ago, which doesn't allow us to invest in the system now or to make target investments for the future. That is honesty that I think people have been avoiding for a long time, but we are not.
And it also, it's important for people to understand, because when you have to do something, as you just did, with cutting service entirely or cutting back on some service, that the fares themselves are just a teeny part of paying for it. I think that should be explained.
No, sure. And so for there's only one transit agency on the planet that actually makes money, and it's in Hong Kong. Because it's actually a real estate company. They sort of ancillary run a transit system and have lots of apartments, not surprising, in a city of tens of millions of people. Every other transit agency is subsidized in some way, shape, or form by local, state, or its federal government. The T is no exception. So the T brings in all in fare revenue and advertising and some real estate. Approximately, say, 50 to 55% cover the cost of running the MBTA all in. And that's about average for a large urban area in the United States, about 50%. So that's the target. It is subsidized like many other government services are subsidized with other forms of fees or taxes. So, and, you know, if we charge what it cost, we'd be charging, you know, the elderly for the ride, $40. We'd be charging folks, at least on commuter rail, certainly a significant more. Bus is probably the best in terms of a return. It's the cheapest to run for obvious reasons. The infrastructure is cheap. Although then we're paying to, you know, pave highways and roads. So there's an investment there as well. But it's really an investment. As I said, it's not about transportation. It's about the jobs and economic development that come as a result of government's investment in transportation.
So Benjamin left a comment on on the Boston Public Radio Facebook page. It says, it seems that there are only three options for budget solutions that have been discussed: price hikes, shifting debt, or a combination of those two. Have those in charge of solving the MBTA budget problems explored any out-of-the-box alternatives that would allow the MBTA to balance and still provide affordable prices? Perhaps an intentional credit default supported by an equity restructuring instead of a debt restructuring. Obviously, this is a guy who knows finance.
Indeed, indeed. Well, so it's another word I think of saying bankruptcy. We are prohibited by statute from declaring bankruptcy. But in any event, you know, it's not as if, you know, the MBTA, I don't think we're in that position. What I mean by that is the T today has to do a couple things. It has to operate. It has to invest in the system that it has. So we have to be continuing investing in, you know, buying new Red Line cars, new Orange Line cars. And then we have this enormous debt piece that has been foisted on the MBTA, part of its big dig, et cetera. I think what we need, rather than a, quote, bankruptcy, is really, and we're having this now, an honest conversation about what expectations there are for the MBTA in terms of the service it provides, and then the debt and some other ancillary questions that have been foisted on it in the past. So, you know, the strength, the T has a credit rating better than the United States government right now. I'm not sure, and so that keeps our bonding costs down low. I'm not sure through a bankruptcy or a restructuring, if you will, we'd want to absorb that. You'd pay for it just a different way, which is higher borrowing costs in the future.
So not a good alternative right now.
No, I mean, it's not legally, as a legal matter, it's not available to us. Even if it was, you know, you'd probably use it as airlines do, for example, to restructure some benefits with labor. As I mentioned earlier, we've already restructured pension and healthcare costs. We've negotiated some tough labor agreements with the carmen. And as I think I gave folks a pictorial, we spend more in debt service than we do on payroll. So it's not as if, you know, payroll is really our issue. Our real issue is this debt.
So I think maybe a lot of people don't know that the T is funded by sales tax, mm-hmm. Massachusetts sales tax, which has taken a hit because a number of people are now going online to make purchases.
Sure.
So that purchases that might have happened in the state where folks would pay sales tax, now they don't have to pay. It's free. Jason Swartz has a really interesting piece in Boston Magazine saying that if Governor Patrick's proposal, which is to make Amazon-like entities offer goods and services, but make folks have to pay taxes on that.
Sure.
That's a bigger chunk than in turn for the T. He estimated something like $387 million, of which, you know, some $62 million would go to the T. That's a lot of money. You in favor of that proposal?
As a general matter, the administration is in favor of that proposal. And obviously, you know, we've talked about it for the Main Street businesses. It's not fair that when you go and shop there, they're passing on the tax, but you shop online and it's not. Just when, by the way, just when the internet began in earnest for shopping online, which is around 2000, is exactly the time when the legislature dedicated a penny on the nickel of the sales tax to the T. And that pro forma assumed 3% growth over two decades. And in fact, it's declined, which is one of the reasons why the T is in the fiscal straits it has been, because those numbers have just never come to fruition. Very favorable to it. $60 million, look, it would certainly help. It's not going to solve the challenge before us, but it certainly helps. And I think it's a question of fairness, there's no doubt, for small businesses in the state.
So I couldn't let you leave, speaking of fairness, without addressing the Dukakis Center study out of Northeastern, which looked at fairness with regard to equity on the lines, looking at specifically at African-American commuters. They spend 66 more hours a year traveling because in their communities, bus service is way much, much slower. And there seems to be no fix for that at the moment. It's just something that's accepted. But as the study pointed out, if you're an entity that takes federal dollars, then you have to pay attention to what is equitable transportation. Now, your quote in the stories about it was, you were not surprised. So what does that mean exactly? What's the next step then? If you're not surprised, okay, what happens next?
Yeah, exactly. And later in the story, we talked about what this administration's been doing. So, you know, for listeners, really a focus on Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan, where you have significant bus service. You know, look, the Orange Line went through some of those communities and back in 1985 was rerouted. And I think folks at the time said, hey, we'll be back. Well, 30 years later, we haven't been back. We've been providing some bus service, which has been helpful. But when you've got traffic concerns and other things, you're just about moving quickly. First, invested a lot of dollars in the Fairmont line. In the administration, we've opened one new station. We're opening two more next spring. And we've got one more, a fourth on the table around Blue Hill Ave. That will help some of those communities, those neighborhoods that we've talked about that have been left behind. We've also commissioned what we're calling an RDM, Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan study. This came out of the 28X proposal, which, again, for listeners, about 3 years ago, the DOT or EOT at the time proposed a bus rapid transit system down Blue Hill Avenue. Unfortunately, while I think well-intentioned, we did not engage the community prior to announcing that. And unfortunately, the communities there are used to government announcing things without engaging them. So we've engaged the community through this RDM study to see what in the future we can provide by way of better service. The Orange Line, we have some of the oldest cars in our fleet, and those serve low-income communities of, by the way, of all ethnicities. You go up to north to Medford, to Malden, areas there that need those new Orange Line cars. So, and obviously then into Roxbury and to Jamaica Plain. So we're very attuned to this. There are environmental justice issues on bus emission and diesel emissions that we've been working on. We've got more cleaner buses. And Somerville, same. You know, they've been left behind, and we're working on the Green Line extension. That is one of the most densely urban cities in the entire United States. And they've got lots of roads going through their community, but they don't have good transit. So there are a number of neighborhoods of all ethnicities that we've left behind, and we have to, through this transportation finance discussion, ensure that we're not leaving behind. Because as I said, it's about jobs and economic development. And if we can be improving access for communities in Somerville and Roxbury and Mattapan and Dorchester for jobs and economic development, boy, that can be transformative for those neighborhoods and communities.
And presumably you'll be getting a little help with the new GM who's coming in to take over the MBTA.
I thought I was going to be able to retire once the new GM came. We got a new CEO over at Massport. You're going to love Bev Scott. She is a take-no-prisoners, no BS GM. She's made some tough decisions down in Atlanta. I think she'll bring some fresh thinking. You know, I was GM for 18 months. I had some good ideas, but I don't have all the answers. I'm excited to have her join our team. She's going to live in the service and the system like me and use it every day. So, you know, it's I think it's good. You know, a fresh perspective from outside of Boston. She worked in Rhode Island but never in Massachusetts. So she'll get used to the rough and tumble a little bit, but at the same time, she's not a shrinking violet.
All right. Well, we'll be looking to meet Bev Scott when she gets here, and maybe I'll see her on the train.
Absolutely. We'll have her come in.
Right. But thank you so much, Richard Davey, for talking to us today.
Thank you, Kyle. I appreciate it.
We've been talking about all things transportation with Richard Davey, the Secretary and CEO of the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. The news surrounding Mayor Menino's health seems to be changing by the day. He's been hospitalized and out of sight for weeks. For a mayor who's known for being so public, so accessible, and always out and about, what do Boston citizens deserve to know? And when it comes to his health, what should remain private? I'll be bringing you that conversation with medical ethicist Art Kaplan. I'm Callie Crossley. The conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH.